Kemi did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across West Midlands as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, healthcare training programs operate below capacity while hospital wards struggle with chronic staff shortages. The work that needs doing exists alongside the people who want to do it, separated by a funding cap that treats public investment as a burden rather than the pathway to care.
My mother used to come home from her night shifts at City Hospital with stories that made me want to follow her into nursing. She'd tell me about the patients who remembered her name, the families she'd helped through their worst moments, the way a skilled touch could make someone feel less alone. Growing up in Handsworth, watching her dedication, I knew I wanted that same connection to healing. But by the time I finished my biomedical science degree at Birmingham City University, the route into nursing had become a maze of closed doors. I've been working as a healthcare assistant at University Hospitals Birmingham for 3 years now, watching qualified nurses rush between patients, seeing firsthand how understaffed we are. Every shift reinforces why I want to train as a nurse, and every shift makes it clearer that the system desperately needs more of us. In 2021, I applied to Birmingham City University's nursing program, the same institution where I'd done my undergraduate degree. I felt confident about my application. I had the grades, the experience, the motivation. The rejection letter was polite but stark. They told me there were only 180 funded places for over 800 applicants. Due to funding constraints, the letter explained, we are unable to offer places to all qualified candidates. I assumed I simply needed to strengthen my application and try again. In 2022, I reapplied with additional experience and stronger references. Same result. This time, I called the admissions office to understand what I was missing. The admissions tutor, Sarah, was sympathetic but clear. It's not about your qualifications, Kemi. We have brilliant candidates we have to turn away every year. The problem is the number of funded places. I asked her to explain what that meant. She directed me to contact Health Education England, the body responsible for workforce planning. When I called them, the administrator was equally frank. Our training budget has been capped by Treasury spending limits. We simply cannot fund more nursing places regardless of demand. There is no funding, she said. It sounded reasonable. Everyone seemed to accept it as an unshakable fact. I applied to Coventry University as a backup in early 2023, hoping a different institution might have more flexibility. The rejection came with the same language, funding constraints. I started to feel like I was banging my head against a wall that everyone insisted was necessary, even as we all agreed it made no sense. Then I decided to visit Birmingham City University's nursing faculty in person. I wanted to see these constraints with my own eyes. What I found contradicted everything I'd been told. Entire computer labs sat empty during the day. Lecture theatres that could hold 200 students were locked and unused. The simulation labs with their expensive medical equipment were dark more often than they were occupied. I found Sarah, the admissions tutor, in her office and asked her directly, "If you have space for more students, why are you turning people away?" She looked uncomfortable but answered honestly. "The university has the physical capacity for 300 nursing students. We have the equipment, the facilities, most of the teaching staff, but Health Education England's allocation has been frozen. We can only afford to fund 180 places because that's all they'll reimburse us for." I pressed her, "But the buildings are here, the equipment is here. What exactly is it that there's no money for?" She paused, and I could see her thinking through the logic for perhaps the first time. "I suppose the salaries for additional teaching staff, the administrative costs, the clinical placement coordination..." She stopped. "But you're right, most of the infrastructure is just sitting there." That same week, I spoke to Davina, who works in HR at Queen Elizabeth Hospital, where I'd done some of my clinical experience. She told me they had 150 nursing vacancies they couldn't fill. We're desperate, she said. We're paying agency nurses premium rates because we can't recruit enough permanent staff. The contradiction became impossible to ignore. The hospitals needed nurses. Hundreds of qualified candidates wanted to train as nurses. The facilities to train them existed and were underused. The experienced nurses to teach them were available. But someone in Westminster had decided that connecting these pieces would cost too much money. I started to understand that the phrase, "there is no funding," was not describing a natural law like gravity. It was describing a choice. The government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would train the nurses that the hospitals desperately needed. The decision was dressed up as an accounting problem, but it was actually a political decision about priorities. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still working as a healthcare assistant, still watching the gaps in care that additional nurses would fill, still seeing the training facilities sitting half empty while wards run short-staffed. But I understand now that this is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Kemi experienced has a name, fake experts. In the 1950s, tobacco companies hired scientists to dispute the link between smoking and cancer. The scientists had credentials, but they were selected specifically because they would provide the conclusion the industry wanted. The expertise was real, but it was deployed to serve a predetermined narrative, not to find the truth. When Kemi was told there is no funding for nurse training, the decision makers cited economists who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident truth. These economists have qualifications, but they were chosen specifically because they reinforce the fiction that a government budget works like a household budget. They speak with authority about fiscal responsibility and unsustainable spending, as though repeating the household analogy makes it true. The expertise being cited serves to maintain a predetermined conclusion that public investment must be rationed. But the UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Birmingham Selly Oak, those resources were sitting idle. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. But which economists? The profession is divided, and many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Birmingham Selly Oak ranks 142 out of 543 English constituencies on the Deprivation Index, placing it in decile 3, English Indices of Deprivation 2025, MHCLG. The constituency has 2,352 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Total grants received were £52.1 million, 360 giving grant nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.